Greetings. My name is Grigory Melnik.
I'm Erwin Vandervolk.
And we are from the Enterprise Library team, members of the Patterns and Practices team, who are working on the next release for Enterprise Library, which is Enterprise Library Silverlight Integration Pack. Some of you may have watched the first screencast we did with Chris Tavares on basic validation scenarios. If you remember that transport controller demo, and it's still available online, you can watch that as well. But today we're going to talk about something more comprehensive, something more interesting that we're building into this release, and this is specifically around the cross-tier validation scenarios, something that people who are building enterprise level applications, line of business applications, run into often, and we want to provide good support for that scenario. So in this demo, once again, we're going to do validation across different layers. We want to show how some of the validation rules can be shared, so you don't have to, you know, recode them on the server side, on the client side. We're going to show three different approaches how this can be done, with the use of the regular POCO objects, with the use of the WebCF RIA services entities. So you'll see how this is nicely integrated, how this can be nicely integrated with WebCF RIA services, and then also the config-driven rules. We will also show how we can propagate or aggregate all the validation errors and have them display all together in a different layer. And the demo will also include the rule sets, something that, again, many people who are using validation application block have taken advantage of. They're now ported and supported in the validation block for Silverlight. And the last item on the agenda is support for implementing iNotify data error info and iNotify property change. So I just want to mention as a disclaimer that this is still an early preview of what we're doing. It is based on the first drop of the validation application block for Silverlight. It's available on CodePlex, but since we're still iterating on this, it's some things are still fairly rough, so don't put it into production. Don't deploy it into your production systems yet. This is meant to give you an early preview in what we're doing and also gather feedback that we can act upon before we release.
Okay, so what we did for this this iteration is we took an application that was built using Prism, the stock trader array, and we took that and implemented the enterprise library on top of that. Now, in order to get our validation story to work nicely in Silverlight, we introduced a couple of new things. And one of them is a class to help you build models or view models, which we call the View Model Helper. Now, as Grigory mentioned, this class can help you to implement two interfaces that are very common on models or view models, namely the iNotify property change interface and also the iNotify data error info. Now, the iNotify data error info is just an interface to ask an object what kind of errors do you have, but it we also the View Model Helper also helps you to write errors into your business entities. This is especially helpful if you want to call validation across a graph of objects, which we're also supporting. Now, the View Model Helper helps you to validate individual properties on an entity, which is very handy when you're editing a particular a field and you want to get information while editing to say, is this valid or not? Not all technologies use the same method for setting and displaying validation errors. For example, WebCF RIA services have a different method for that than the enterprise library validation block. So we have some kind of provider model in between which allows you to plug in different methods of setting errors on an object. And lastly, the View Model Helper is also helpful if you do cross-tier validation. If you have validation rules that are on the client and also on the server, you might want to have validation rules that occur, that validation errors that occur on your server to propagate to the clients and allow you to easily show them in your UI. Now, in order to get that to work nicely, there is already a validation error summary control. It's in the Silverlight SDK, but unfortunately, it doesn't automatically pick up errors that are not bound to a specific property. So we'll also show how you can show some of those validation errors automatically in the validation error summary. Now, if you look at what we did for the URI, this is an example of one of the scenarios we introduced. In the middle, you'll see our business entities. The scenario is you have an account holder with some information, and one account holder can have many bank accounts, and we need some kind of UI to edit the account holder and bank accounts. Now, as you can see, a typical Silverlight application usually has a server part and a client part, where the service part is usually an ASP.NET server, and the client part is a Silverlight application. And one of the things you would typically like to do is have validation rules that are on the client just to improve the user experience, to be able to, for example, validate on edit. But you also want to run the same validation rules again on the server because somebody might call the web services that you're supporting directly. In this particular scenario, we have most of the rules running on the client, but we have some additional rules that are also running on the server. So we'll show you how that works as well. And then there's several technologies that you can use in order to communicate between the client and the server. In our case, we use WCF Data Services and REST, but we could have just as easily used another technology.
Yeah, I see.
Now let's dive into the code and see what this looks like. Okay, so first of all, the model here. The data model, as I'm mentioned before, there's an account holder which has certain properties, and there's one or more bank accounts that you can hold as an account holder. Now, this is an entity model which with a database behind it, but in our case, we implemented this as POCO objects. You'll see it here. These are just regular .NET classes with validation rules defined by the validation block attributes on top of them. So, for example, the first name has to have at least one character, so there's a string length validator on top of this.
Did you have to do anything with these POCO objects? Did you have to derive from any special base class in this case?
No. I mean, WCF Real Service, for example, does use a base class. It uses an entity, and we're going to show that a bit later in this demo. But in this case, we wanted to show real POCO objects. So you'll see that this class, it does implement an iNotify property change interface, but other than that, it's a real POCO object.
Nice.
Now you'll see, in order to get this to work, we built something. The property changed helper is actually something that the view model helper uses internally as well, and it helps you to create properties a bit easier, especially the notify property changed. You'll see here that this auto property is something that when you set it, will automatically raise notify property changed. It's just a very easy interface to use, but you don't have to use this in this case. It's just a handy feature to implement notify property changed on your models or view models. Now, these POCO classes are now on the server, but we use the same class file, the same CS files on the client, and we use something in Visual Studio called linked files for that. And you'll see that this is the Silverlight project that we have here, and here's the models, and you'll see that the account holder and the bank account CS files are shared. So they're physically also being used in the Silverlight project. And like I mentioned, we're using WCF Reader Services in this case as the transport. Now, to get that to work, we needed to just tweak a little thing, because if you normally do add service reference like this, you can, in the advanced options, say reuse types in referenced assemblies. Unfortunately, that doesn't work for WCF Reader Services. For WCF Data Services. It does work for regular services. But to overcome that issue, we just created the context class that would be generated. We just created it out of, manually. And you'll see that it actually contains very, very little code, so you don't have to worry that much about it. Now, like I mentioned, these classes are now also running on the client, so the same validation rules are also present on the client here. And if I run this application, you'll see just a little example of what that would look like. So in this case, I'm editing a bank account. You'll see some information here. And as soon as I start editing stuff, there's another little trick that we did here. These models support auto-validation, which means as soon as you change one of the properties, it will automatically, using iNotify property changed, validate that individual property. And you'll see that the validation rule that fired and is automatically updated using the validation summary. Also be some validation rules which go across different objects. As you will see, the list of bank accounts is one of those examples. Now, if I add some data here, and if I now say I will try to submit, let me enter the data here, you will see that a validation rule occurred in one of these child elements and these child objects. And ideally, you'd like to have one method that you call just validate my entire graph of objects. And any validation rules that are broken in any of my child objects, they should just be picked up and displayed automatically. And a few model helper will help you do that, and I'll show you how that works in just a second. Another thing that is a bit difficult in a SQLite application is if I have a validation rule that's broken, that's not tied to any particular control. As you will see here, I mean, I should have at least one bank account, but it's not bound to any particular control. I mean, it's other than the list of bank accounts. But that's also something that we allow you to bind very easily to your UI. So let's take a quick look at how that's implemented. I've created a view model for my view. And on the view model, for example, you will see that there's a class called, that there's a property called account info. And because I've added a object validator attribute on top of it, you will see that if I validate my view model, it will also validate the account holder. And within the account holder class, let's go to the account holder class. Yes, it's already open. If I go to the property bank accounts, you'll see a similar pattern here where the bank account has a object collection validator on it, which basically tells the validation application block, if I'm validating an account holder, also iterate over all its bank accounts and run the validation rules against them. So now that I have this structure in place, all I have to do is call viewModelHelper.validate. And what this will do is it will call validation on all of my objects, and it will return a list of validation errors. But it will also add those validation errors to each of the individual objects' validation error collection. So, for example, if my bank account has a validation error on it, it will set that validation error on my bank account. So you will see in the list of bank accounts that one particular bank account that has the issue, you will see the validation error occur there. Now, another thing that this method allows you to do is also pass in rule sets. In this particular case, we've used that to implement something like warnings. In this case, a warning is a validation rule that is not critical, so you can, as a user, choose to ignore that. And you will see that I'm passing in the rule set called warning, and of course in the object validator I also had to say, okay, if you get a rule set warning, forward it to my sub-object. And in this way you can have optional rule sets where you can say, in this case I want to run these rules, and in that case I want to run those rules. Now, speaking of warnings, we've implemented warnings in a slightly different way. So we haven't introduced an attribute for that, but we've done this configuration-driven. So if I look in my server, there is here the web.config file. Using the Enterprise Library configuration tool, I've added a validation rule on the account holder that says, if your risk is lower than 5 or higher than 95, then you're probably setting an extreme risk level. Now, this might be something that you might want to tweak on the, or might want to have the business tweak during when your application is already in production. So this rule will be loaded into the Silverlight client. But Silverlight doesn't support regular config files. So what we did here is, using the config tool, you can export it also to a XAML configuration file. Now, this is an automatic export, which will return the validation rules. Now you will see some errors because it's not visualized. But here's the same configuration file that's been generated, but now in XAML format. And this XAML configuration file is then loaded into my Silverlight application, so that if I go here and add a bank account, but I set my risk tolerance to something very slim, it will ask me, are you sure you wish to have such a risk tolerance level? So this is an example of how you would do configuration-driven rules, but also how you can specify rule sets.
And just to reiterate, this is very powerful, where you can do the configuration and externally, as opposed to hard-coding it into your attributes or programmatically somewhere else. And based on the requests that we were getting from customers, this is something that that quite a few of them asked for. So the important thing just to notice here is that even though you can do your external configuration just in XML, the config tool, the one that many of you may be familiar with and already taking advantage of, you can continue using that. And then the way we're building it is that there'll be a conversion wizard or an automatic conversion step on the projects themselves that you can integrate with, that will allow to convert that XML or the standard config into the XAML, and that's what is used by the Enterprise Library Silverlight integration pack to configure itself properly in the Silverlight runtime.
Yes. Now, all these validation rules that we've seen so far are run on the client, but they're also being executed on the server again. And there's one validation rule that we implemented that's running only on the server, and that is if I enter, I think it was this bank account number. Yes, I'm sure I want to have this risk tolerance. I get this message box. This is just a message box we implemented ourselves. But it says something went wrong on the server, and you will see that the validation error from the server propagates to the client. And again, it's a validation error that's not WCF data service doesn't allow you to pass the record and the key very easily. So this is just a validation error message. But you'll see that, you know, this message is displayed in the UI again. But so, it comes from the server, so this is a regular message.
Yeah, but typically that would be something that would get consumed on the server, and there is no easy way of going and propagating it to the client, even if you want to show it here. The way you are demonstrating is that there is a fairly easy way of getting those type of errors that you choose that occur on the server to surface up on the Silverlight client.
Yes. So I can quickly show what that would look like in your view model. You will see here that if the validation, the client-side validation goes okay, we'll go into save account holder, which is the method here. Of course, in Silverlight, everything happens asynchronously. So this is the method that gets called when the asynchronous action is completed. And you will see if success, then everything is okay, close the view. But if not successful, then you get one validation error back. And in our scenario, because WCF Data Services doesn't really have a nice method of returning a list of validation errors, I'm just returning one message. But if you're, for example, using real WCF services, then you can get a much richer set of results back, and you can show them in the UI in exactly the same way that the client-side validation errors were returned. But this example that we've shown now is using just plain old CLR objects. And many people who are building SilverLight applications nowadays are using WCF reader services. Now, the validation block is also designed to complement the validation story that the WCF reader services already uses. And we implemented that in a different scenario, which is the orders module. Now, in the orders module, again, we have a data model with a kind of a similar data model, order and order details. And these are exposed as entities. So if I look at the generated code, these are now real WCF data services entities on the server. Now, WCF data services has a method of generating these classes again on the client. And any validation rules that we've defined on the server using attributes will also be present on the client. So we've added some validation rules in the metadata, just the way that WCF data services describes. For example, we have a range attribute on the number of shares, so you have to buy at least one share. And this is an example of using a WCF data service attribute. But we also have an example of using
validation rules. That's the one from Antlip. Yeah.
This is the one from Antlip, and this is the one from WCF data services.
So you can see how nicely you can mix them, right? I just want to draw attention of the people watching this webcast that you can mix them in the same on the same entity.
Yes. Now, on the client, these are generated by the WCF Reader Services CodeGen. So if I go into the orders module on the client, in the generated code, these are coming across again. So if I go to order, order details, let's have the more validation rules. And for example, the shares, you will see that it has regenerated my validation attributes on the client.
And you wouldn't want to change it manually.
No, this is generated code. So there's one place where I define my validation attributes, and it gets generated to the client as well. But of course, I want to be able to add some additional validation rules as well. For example, validation rules that either use rule sets again, or maybe validation rules that are defined in config. So for this example, we've used a similar strategy, which is we've defined a warning in config, and those warnings are also being loaded by the validation block. And if I now run the application and, for example, add an order for 10 shares, apparently the business in this case says, well, if you order something for a very little amount of shares, that a fee might happen. So this is a validation warning warning you to say, you know, if you want to do this, you know, it's okay, but it will incur a fee if you order less than 100 shares. Now, this would be a bit difficult to implement using WCF Reader Services because there's no rule set support in WCF Reader Services. But Enterprise Library, working very closely with the Reader Services framework, will allow you to add rule set support to that, and also config-driven rules. There's one caveat there is that if you want rule set or configuration-driven rule support, you will have to have Enterprise Library trigger the validation rules. So any rules that are defined like this, just without a rule set, will be picked up by either validation block, validation engine, or by WCF Reader Services engine, even if it's a FAD validation rule. But if you want to use rule sets or configuration-driven rule, you will have to trigger validation using the validation block.
Can you show our audience where you trigger that and how you trigger it through the Enterprise Library?
Yes. So we've used a kind of similar strategy here, where the order view model has been built just as a regular view model. It implements I notify data error, it implements I notify property changed, but it doesn't, in this case, doesn't derive from any specific base class again. But this order view model has an order object, in this case the current order. Now, the current order is a WCF real services entity, and by decorating it with an object validator attribute, we're again telling the validation rules engine to traverse this this reference. And again, for the order details, it works similarly with the object collection validator. Now, if I press the submit button, so I will fire the submit order method, you will see the similar method again. I'm calling here the viewmodel helper.validate, which under the covers just calls the validation the validation block validate method. And because I've decorated the properties with the object validator attribute, it will traverse the graph of objects and validate all of them. And this is just a way of triggering validation using Enterprise Library. Now, as soon as I do the actual submit, as you will see here, this is it goes through a controller class, but in the end, it will do a WCF Real Services submit to the server. In that case, WCF Real Services will also trigger its own validation method. So it will always validate the validation attributes that don't have rule sets or configuration on them. Now, again, on the server, this validation will be triggered again, and on the server, we will also, using VAP, using exactly the same method as we saw before, just call validate, trigger the validation on the server as well. Now, one thing that's that I mentioned before is because we're using a graph of validation objects, of objects here, and the view model helper again will distribute the validation errors that have occurred to the individual objects. But now because the object that is validated is a WCF Real Services entity, it has to use a different strategy for assigning the validation errors onto that object. And that's where the provider model that I mentioned before comes really in handy, because it allows you to validate those, sorry, to set the validation errors on those individual objects.
Yeah, and thus the view model helper that you just demoed turns into more of like a one stop for all the things that you want to do, whether it's through the RIA services or the Enterprise Library validation block, right?
Yes. So, like you said, the ViewModel helpers in this case is a one-stop shop that it just helps you to do pretty much everything that you want to do on a ViewModel. But for example, if you're only interested in, you know, those nice auto properties and maybe some iNotify property change, there is under the covers, the ViewModel helper uses another class called the Property Changed Helper. And the ViewModel helper is, in this case, a collection of validation errors. But you can also just use the base class, the collection of validation errors that we've defined for this, if you're just interested in implementing iNotify data error info. So it is built kind of modular, so you can pick and choose what you want. But still, if you want the one-stop shop, you can use this class. And of course, using the ViewModel helper, it's really easy to create your own custom base class for ViewModels, but we don't force you to create to use our base class,
which I'm sure many people would appreciate. So, are there any other caveats in this approach that you've demoed? You already talked about the fact that if you want the support for rule sets and external config, you need to trigger configurations through ntlib validation block. But are there any other caveats that the users should be aware of? Any other limitations?
Well, there's only the one you mentioned in the intro, is that if you want your validation errors that are not bound to any particular property to show up in the UI, you have to use a specific behavior that we've implemented as well. And I can quickly show what that would look like in your view. To open the right view, it's in the account holder project, the account holder view. Now let me just close the XAML, or the designer, because we're not interested in the designer. Nope. So in the bottom of this class, we're using just a regular validation summary, but on top of that, we're adding a behavior. This behavior has been built using the new behavior model from Silverlight 4. And what this behavior will do is it will bind against the current object, so that's in this case the view model, and it will find for that view model its validation error collection, and actually it's going to see, okay, what kind of validation errors are there on this object, and if there are validation errors that are not already shown in the validation summary, it will add them as well. So this is all you have to add to get that behavior to that the unbound validation errors will also be displayed. And this will work just as well if you're using a WHF Reader Services application.
Okay. Very nice. And it sounds like we've talked about the caveats, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Which pretty much brings us to the end of this screencast. And once again, we encourage you to try out the current implementation of validation block for Silverlight. It's available on CodePlex, and please provide feedback. Post it or contact us directly via email. We really need your feedback.
But we've only implemented this as a spike in the RI, and we still have to implement it in the Enterprise Library DLLs itself. So this would be the perfect time to provide feedback saying, hey, do you like, or this is something that we don't like, or this is some extra features that would be great as an addition.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your attention.
And this is the list of resources for you.